This week's show is brought to you by Intense Pro Wrestling. Every Saturday night in January, IPW action will be taking place at the East Amory Community Center with a bell time of 8 p.m. This Saturday's card will feature a six-man tag team main event with Curly Moe, The Show Chris Adams, and the IPW champion Extreme Bret Michaels, taking on Neil the Real Deal Taylor and two mystery partners. Also, Best Friends Collide as Bad Attitude Tony Dabbs takes on his longtime partner, The Stud, Scott Porto. You'll also see the future Chris Styles, Devin Reigns, and many more in action this Saturday in Amory, Mississippi at the East Amory Community Center, bell time, 8 o'clock. Thank you for joining us once again for the Wrestling News Center podcast. I'm your host, Gene Jackson, and we're a wrestling podcast that focuses on indie wrestling, especially here in the Southeast. And if you enjoy the show, tell a friend about us or share a link to the show on your Facebook or Twitter. And if you want to, you know, give some feedback on the show, maybe you want to be a guest on the show, you'd like us to come out and see your show, to comment on it, what have you. GeneJackson95@gmail.com is one way to get in touch with me. You can also follow me on Twitter. That's twitter.com/VinceHatesUsAll. Or you can add me on Facebook at facebook.com/VinceHatesUsAll. And any ones of those means you want to go through, you can get in contact with me. And we'll answer your question. We'll see about getting you on the show, whatever your request may be. Of course, we're brought to you each week by WrestlingNewsCenter.com, your daily source for all the current news in the world of professional wrestling, as well as columns and reviews. So make sure to bookmark WrestlingNewsCenter.com and check it every day for new content. This week, I was joined by my good friend, Neil the Real Deal Taylor. We talked a little bit about his experience this past Friday night at Pro South Wrestling, his first time there. Philosophies on calling the matches in the dressing room, and the rest of the interview we talked about deathmatch wrestling. That's something Neil isn't real familiar with. He certainly hasn't participated in any of it, really hasn't watched much of it. Deathmatch wrestling isn't as widely received in Mississippi as it is here in Alabama. So I showed him a DVD with some death matches, some of the most talked about death matches of 2011. And then we sat down afterwards to discuss it at length. And there may be some mildly offensive language in there. I don't know. I've tried not to cuss too much on the new show, but I mean, especially sitting and talking with Neil, somebody I've known for so many years and spent so many hours talking wrestling with, little things slip out here and there, but nothing too bad. So I don't think it's anything, if the kids were in the room, would scar them for life or anything. So give it a listen and see if you agree with our take on death matches and such. And if you don't agree with it, like I said, use one of the means I mentioned earlier to contact me, and we can discuss it further. But now, here's Neil Taylor. All right, we're back live here on the Wrestling News Center podcast, live from Gadsden, Alabama, for the first time. I actually have a podcast guest in my home. We're in the, as my wife calls it, the man cave / the wrestling room. And my guest at this time is my good friend and frequent podcast guest in the past, Neil the Real Deal Taylor. How's it going, Neil?
It's going good. We really should be doing video. This room is pretty overwhelming. You get so many pictures, and there's probably 200 action figures in here, and there's no telling how many DVDs are in here. This is crazy.
Yeah, it's something. There's probably,
I would say at least 1,500 wrestling DVDs in here at last count, give or take a few more by now, probably. That's the last my count, and that was like a year or two ago. But it's great to have you here. Like I say, finally got you over here from Mississippi to visit, and we checked out the NWA Pro South Wrestling show last night. You worked the show with a guy named Brian Alexander, and been trying to find a time that you could, you know, work it in your schedule to come over here and work and hang out here at the house. What did you think about the Pro South show?
I enjoyed it. They probably have the best setup of any indie wrestling show that I've ever seen. It almost looked like a old WCW Thunder set, you know, with the blues and the blacks. But it's set up really well. It's really crazy that they don't have some sort of television over there to you know, shoot there, because it just that thing is made for television. But the match was good. I enjoyed the match. Of course, it's an easy, simple match. Of course, most of all of mine are. But I enjoyed it. Everybody was super nice. And, you know, I always get a big kick out of going to, you know, a show where I don't really know anybody there and just kind of, you know, working with somebody just to kind of get out of the norm every once in a while is always a lot of fun.
Did you, I mean, Brian Alexander is a guy who's, he's probably closer to your age. He's kind of an old school guy like you, you know, kind of more of a go out and go with the flow and work the match kind of thing. A lot of the guys there, a lot of the young guys, they do a lot of the fast pace, high spots that a lot of the old school guys kind of shit on. But I know one thing, it's me working there, it's been kind of tough. You know, they work out most all the spots in the back. Like, the entire match is pretty much laid out in the back. And I know that I wasn't able to do that back when I used to wrestle. And I know you try to not do a lot of that yourself. But that seems to be the way, not just on their shows, but some of the other shows I'm going to now. I mean, it's kind of what everybody's doing. Are you starting to run into that a lot on a lot of the shows that you work? And if so, how much of a problem is that? Or I don't know, how much does that go against what you believe in?
Well, it's getting more and more. It doesn't seem like it's as much, especially like on the Mississippi area shows, because a lot, you know, most folks all walk and talk there. But shows away from there, especially like some of the shows in Tennessee that I do, and even some of the ones in South Mississippi that I do, it seems like it's becoming an ongoing trend to call the whole thing before you go out there. And then, you know, somebody like me, which, you know, I don't, and it's not necessarily that I've always thought that's just a bad way to go, although, you know, I don't understand if you go out there and you forget one of the 15 spots you do, how you don't just get completely lost, because, you know, you've blown, you know, what you've been going through the whole time. But, you know, and you don't really know what a crowd is going to react to. But, you know, I just simply cannot remember it. That's just all there is to it. I can't remember that many spots at one time. But you have to fill out a crowd before you know what they want to see. Because if you go out there, it doesn't matter how many flips and flops and, you know, all the springboards and all that stuff that you do. If the crowd ain't buying it, why are you even doing it? So, you know, and every crowd is different. I don't care who tells you what. Every single crowd is different, and they want to see something different. And, you know, I don't know how you don't go out and fill out a crowd before you decide, okay, they want to see a big, you know, spot fest, for the lack of a better word, or, you know, they want to see a slow, you know, match that, you know, maybe interacts with the people a little more.
For me personally, I've kind of come to find that maybe there's room on every show for each. You know, maybe you have the one slow walk and talk match, but you do have the one high spot match. You do have the one little stiff, I don't like to say hardcore match, but, you know, stiffer type match. The thing to me, even though I don't subscribe to that theory of laying out the spots, and I certainly can't remember that. I do good to remember my one spot to interfere as a manager. If you're working that style, that's not really something you can call in the ring, because one thing leads to another, which leads to another, which leads to another. and it doesn't really lend itself to calling it spot for spot. So, I mean, I guess it's kind of a hard, you know, thing to say. Like, on one hand, I see the point, but on the other hand, I mean, you can't really knock them because you can't just go out there with no plan and all that kind of shit fall together. Kind of like, you know, the fast pace, like TV style or the Ring of Honor style, Chikara style type stuff that, you know, is popular
well,
these
know,
days.
The only way I've ever seen, you know, stuff like that done where it can be kind of called on the fly is if you've got two guys that have, you know, worked together 10,000 times and they know each other really well and, you know, they know how the other guy works and kind of what to look for. You know, like, you know, I can work a faster pace match with, you know, a guy like Tony Dabbs who, you know, I've wrestled 10,000 times. We pretty much know what the other guy does, and, you know, we can call stuff on the fly, you know, or a guy like, even like Chris Styles, I can do those type matches with him. But, you know, you have to have somebody in the ring that you've worked with an incredible amount of time to, you know, to really be able to piece that together on the fly. You know, I couldn't, you know, there's no way you'd ever be able to walk up and just do that with somebody that, you know, you relatively don't know.
And that's why I think, like, say if, and these are two guys you're really familiar with, you could book a show and throw a Derek King and Rocker in the ring, and if they went out there and they felt the crowd, they could do a fast-paced match, high-spot match with, you know, if they needed to, but they could also bullshit, walk and talk, pretty much do whatever based on how the crowd was feeling that night.
Well, you know, I travel with those guys for, you know, almost a year. And, you know, I've seen them wrestle each other 10,000 times. I've seen every variation of a match that they can do, whether, you know, it's, you know, we're in a, you know, if some show off somewhere where, you know, we're just kind of, they're kind of walking and talking and, you know, maybe, you know, playing with the crowd a little more than they're, you know, actually wrestling. I've seen that match, you know, and I've also seen where, you know, they've had to go on live TV back when we were doing Memphis Television and go out there and not really call anything and just, you know, turn it up. Matter of fact, there's a match, anytime you mention those two guys, there's a match that comes to mind that I remember watching it, just, you know, almost completely marking out for. It was back when Rocker was still doing the Mr. America gimmick. He and Derek were wrestling each other at it was a Memphis wrestling show that was at the South Haven Coliseum. And it was just, I don't know, it's probably one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen because it was, you know, Sale, high spot, Sale, he's almost got him, and then, you know, they do another high spot. And it was just, I don't know, the whole thing flowed together really well. And as a matter of fact, I think the highlight reel of the match is on YouTube, you know, if anybody wants to search it. But, I kind of agree with you. I think there's room for that type stuff, you know, on a show, but I think it almost needs to be a mixture. You know, you have a few high spot matches and then, you know, then some old school matches, because God knows you can't load up a match with full of high spot matches because, you know, it gets pretty damn monotonous. You know, that all you're doing is watching a bunch of guys running the ropes, basically, right. You know, and jumping off something. And then, you know, if you had a whole show worth of old school stuff, you know, simply from the fact that, you know, everybody is so entranced by the WWE stuff now, you know, because it's usually a little more action. You know, you can't do that like, you know, the old Memphis matches from the 70s where, you know, they work, you know, five punches the whole thing, and you definitely can't do a whole show of that because, I mean, you can't keep a crowd that way.
Well, I think one problem, too, is especially, like, young guys don't understand is old school and psychology and high spots are not all mutually exclusive. Like, you can work high spots into a match but still have psychology if you use it in the right place. Like, you know, a guy like, you know, Shawn Michaels and even, like, some of the Ring of Honor guys put high spots into their match, but the match builds to it. Like, you know, we've talked about shows you've been on, and I've seen the DVDs of them where guys were doing, you know, cage matches or ladder matches, and the bell's not through ringing before they've already dove off the ladder three times. But, you know, meanwhile, Scott Hall and Shawn Michaels' ladder match is considered one of the greatest matches in history because of the way it built towards that stuff. So, I don't know. I wish a lot of the younger guys would take the time to learn watch some of the old school stuff and learn the psychology and learn how to blend the two together. Like, high spots are great, diving off stuff's great, but learn when and where to do it and how many times. You ain't got to dive off 20 times during a match. You can dive off, you know, once and make it mean a whole lot, you know. But anyway, we've had that conversation. I've had that conversation with many people. You've had it. We've all had it. So we won't beat that dead horse anymore than we already have. But we did set up last night till, what was it, 2 in the morning, I think, talking wrestling as we usually do. And I realized that you're not really familiar with the deathmatch wrestling. I mean, I know you know of it, you know something about it, but you really hadn't watched much of it or enough really to form a real opinion on it. So this morning I whipped out the old Carnage Cup DVD. And I showed Neil Taylor that DVD, and anybody that followed the Cheap Heat radio shows and all that knows that I spent a lot of time the last few years, each year, promoting the Carnage Cup. I'd have the guys on before the show to promote it. I'd have the guys after the show to talk about it and try to put it over as best I can. And then this year, me and my wife actually went to one live in Coleman and seen it firsthand. And so I gave my honest opinion afterwards, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to the show is already aware of what it was, and you know, gave my thoughts on the whole hardcore deathmatch thing. And I've fallen out of favor with some people, especially the powers that be at IWA Deep South. Was not happy that I guess my opinions weren't in line with theirs. But having shown Neil Taylor specifically the infamous John Rare Spider Boudreaux box cutter stabbing match, what Insane Lane referred to as the Waterhead Battle Royal, the Hardcore Rumble, and also the Danny Havoc bulldozer death match that resulted in Bulldozer getting superplexed onto the shopping cart at the end. I wanted to talk to Neil a little bit now about, having seen this now, what is his current opinion of deathmatch wrestling as a genre of the professional wrestling business?
Well, let me preface it with this, and because God knows I'm about making money, okay? And because, you know, as a matter of fact, the other night I was YouTubing, and Bobby Heenan said, if you're not in the business for anything but to make money, then you're a fool, which was also a quote from Gorilla Monsoon, but... You know, I'm all about making making money in the wrestling business, and I think everybody, you know, if you can make some money, do it. And you know, after watching that, you know they pull a good crowd. You know, this thing's actually pull a good crowd, and I believe you've told me that they do a lot of DVD sales online. You know, with this, but I and if the guy whoever it is running the show, and like I said, and I'll preface it with this also is, I don't know the guy that runs the show. You know, I recognize a couple of people from the DVD that I've been on shows with that I didn't realize they even do these things. You know, I just don't understand, you know, how many, you know, if you do, you know, like 5 matches of that, okay? The first match goes out, they hit each other with 25 light tubes or whatever, and they're throwing each other on these razor boards, and they're doing this and doing that. What in the hell is the guy in the last match going to do? That's the thing. And, you know, at a typical wrestling show, you know, you build toward the main event, you know, and you do a little more and you do a little more and you do a little more where the guys at the end, you know, can go out and, you know, still be able to put on a main event match. How do you build for this? I mean, you know, those guys right there, they're bleeding everywhere, which is a whole different ball of wax with blood all over each other, as well as possibly getting it on paying fans, and with things like HIV and, you know, stuff like that going around now. You know, I don't understand how the guys on the show are making any money from doing this, because I'm going to tell you now, you know, I would never do a show like that ever. But, you know, the guys that do that, and I think there was one guy on there, you said actually that's all he does is goes around the world doing these deathmatch things. I don't understand how he makes any money, because, I mean, if he's, say he makes a ballpark, okay, where he makes $300 a night doing these things, okay, well, he's got a gash in his back or something. He's got to go to the emergency room, get it sewn up. You know, that costs $2,000. How is he ever making any money doing it? Okay, and then another thing is, you know, how long is he going to be able to hold out to do that, you know, even if he's just doing what he's doing now and not try to push the envelope, which eventually everybody's going to have to do. You know, they've got to eventually top it somehow. But, you know, what is the quality of life after you've done this for 4 or 5 years? I don't really understand the logic behind it. I can understand why maybe people pay to get in to see it. You know, I don't think that, I don't know about doing 13 matches of it, but, you know, if that's what you like, then, you know, go for it. I find it hard to watch sometimes, especially with the guy that got stabbed in the arm with the box cutter. You know, I just kind of squirm at that kind of thing.
Yeah, let's stop right there real quick. And you know Spider Boudreaux. You worked with Spider back when he was just doing regular wrestling shows in Alabama early in his I always feel weird calling it careers for these people because nobody's got a wrestling career anymore. Early in his time as a wrestler, when he worked for IWF over in Tupelo. But, so, all right, say so me and you are booked on this deathmatch show, and I sit you down and go, all right, Neil, every year there's one, you know, there's 5,000 light tubes busted, there's barbed wire, there's razor, there's blah, 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 blah. But every year there's one really effed up thing that happens that everybody's talking about afterwards. Like, oh, my God, did you hear on the Carnage Cup this happened? You know, one year, you know, Freak Show stabbed Ian Rott in the eye with a nail or some shit, you know. But so I sit you down and I say, hey, we want to be the guys that everybody's talking about tomorrow. So here's what I come up with. We're gonna throw each other into, you know, boards with razor blades on them, barbed wire, glass. But then I'm gonna reach in my pocket. I'm gonna pull out a box cutter that I use at work that I cut boxes open with 6 days a week. But on my day off, I brought it with me. Company don't realize I got it, so I got to bring it back on Monday. But I got it with me, and I'm thinking, if I whip this bad boy out and I stab you right about here, and I'm pointing at your arm right now,
yeah,
I stab you right about there, and you bleed profusely, I'm thinking that's probably going to get us some attention. That's probably going to freak everybody out. Now, the other thing is I'm going over, so, you know, you're going to have to get stabbed in the arm with a box cutter. You're going to have to lose. But then after we've stabbed you with the box cutter, and after that, then I'm thinking, we're going to go across the building. We're going to climb to the top of the Coke machine. And I don't really know how psychology-wise it's going to make sense that we make each other climb a ladder and get over on top of the Coke machine together. But maybe everybody's suspension of disbelief will allow for the fact that I just put my hand on your ass and pushed you to the top of a Coke machine. And we'll get there. And down and below, there's going to be a table. And people think I'm being sorry. People are listening right now and go, wow, he's being so sarcastic. He's being so facetious. This freaking conversation had to happen or this never would have took place. So somebody had this conversation with Spider Boudreaux.
Yeah.
So we're going to have hypodermic needles taped to a table sticking up. And then I'm going to grab you and do the Kevin Nash side suplex off the top of a Coke machine through a table. And hopefully your head won't bounce off the concrete like a freaking basketball.
Which it did.
And at that point, that is when you'll be pinned, and I will win the match. How you feel about that?
Well, I guess the first question would be, did Spider Boudreaux lose a bet somewhere along the way? Because I'm telling you, even this idea of somebody approaching me and say, "Hey, we're going to do a sidewalk slam off the top of a Coke machine through a table that's got needles stuck in it," I just can't. I mean, really, that just—I don't know. This blows my mind, but. The conversation where when it turned to, hey, I've got this cool idea. Let's stick a box cutter in your arm. I really don't know how I'd even react to that. And the sad part of that is you know, like you said, I've been on some shows with Spider Boudreaux, and I mean, you know, Spider Boudreaux is a decent worker. You know, he always got a decent reaction. You know, why the hell he thinks he's got to do this kind of stuff? I don't understand. I don't understand how twisted somebody has to be to come up with something like that, knowing that you're probably, you know, how will you ever make enough money to justify getting stabbed in the arm with something? You know, when Foley and Funk and all those guys did all those deathmatch tournaments and, you know, in Japan, you know, they were actually, you know, they were making some money doing that stuff, you know, a few $1,000 a show or whatever. And even some of the stuff they did wasn't that risque, you know, opposed to today's obvious standards of death matches. But, you know, how in an independent show, in Coleman, Alabama, in a National Guard Armory, in front of, you know, a couple hundred people, you know, I just don't know. I guess I just can't understand somebody's thought process when it comes to, you know, what your payday is versus, you know, getting stabbed in the arm with a with a box cutter. I don't understand that. I can't imagine what goes through somebody's mind to come up with that. And then likewise, or maybe even more so, I can't understand why somebody would say, hey, I think that's a good idea. Because somebody did that too. As much as you said that conversation happened about pushing the guy up on the Coke machine, that conversation happened too. Hey, I think that's a swell idea. Why don't you stick that thing in my arm? You know, exactly. I wonder where the blade's been.
And then the next conversation that had to happen was going to the promoter, who should have the good sense to say, no, no, not on my watch in a building I've rented am I going to allow a stabbing to take place. But instead, Kevin Brennan, being the deathmatch mark and swell guy that he is, hey, man, it sounds good, man, stab him, it'll look awesome. And he has been the biggest proponent of this. He has went on the internet and defended it and talked about how great it was. And that's another aspect I wanted to get your opinion on, too. Back in the old days when people would bleed and you know, they would do what back then in a worked environment seemed extreme, they would say it's good for business. If they busted Dusty up in the parking lot and it looked like the Four Horsemen really injured him, they'd say that's good for business because it made people think something was more personal. Or Jerry Lawler, you know, stabs Terry Funk in the eye in the empty arena in Memphis in like 79. That's good for business because people think it's, you know, it's real. In 2011, stabbing somebody with a box cutter, in my opinion, is not good for business because there was not one single soul in that building. Yes, their jaw hit the floor. Yes, it was a holy crap moment. But their thought was not, oh my God, John Rare is so pissed off or he is so into this match that he just really stabbed Spider Boudreaux with a box cutter. The thought that everyone had at that moment was, oh my God, this guy is so crazy, ignorant, whatever, he just let this guy stab him with a box cutter. And if your hope was to make people think that you were so mad or you were so into this, you stayed with the box cutter, you killed it 4 minutes later when you took tape and taped up your opponent's arm to try to stop him from bleeding, which is a kind gesture that the referee could have done.
You should have given him a card or a Hallmark card or something.
Yeah, the referee could have done that. But you're such a hardcore angel of death that you had to stab this guy with the box cutter, but yet now you're so concerned. And the commentary, they tried to cover it up, saying that he didn't want to win that way. But, I mean, if you're willing to stab somebody, you're willing. And what was the point of stabbing them? You wanted them to bleed out and die so you could pin them. So, yeah, you're willing to win that way. That's why you did it. So why would you tape them up? That undoes everything you've just tried to accomplish, I would think.
Well, I mean, going back from the first thing you said, it's something that just drives me crazy. Other than this chair keeps falling back on me, the term "it's good for the business" that is like the most overused and overanalyzed statement ever. You know, because somebody gets their tooth knocked out, oh, it's good for the business. If somebody, you know, gets their neck broke, oh, it's good for the business. Well, you know, back in the day, what you're talking about, you know, and prime example, and of course, you know, because everybody knows I'm a big Lawler fan. You know, when Lawler and Funk did that empty arena match, he stuck that piece of wood in Funk's eye. Number one, he didn't actually stick the fucking thing in his eye. You know, he didn't actually do that. He, you know, it was worked. And at that point, it was good for the business because they could sell tickets, you know, to see, you know, they could sell tickets, you know, to come back on it or whatever. But, you know, in this situation where the guy gets stabbed, you know, they and I'm sure some they came in the dressing room and said, oh, it's good for the business. Okay, well, you tell me this. Who is it good for? Is it good for the two guys that are in the ring? They got their $50 a piece, and one of them's going to the doctor, going to the emergency room to get 10 stitches put in his arm. The guy that who it's good for is the guy that's running the show because, okay, now he's still selling DVDs over this incident, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, who is it good for? You know, it almost makes me wonder if the guy running the show didn't even come up with the idea. Hey, why don't you stab the guy with a box cutter? It's a razor blade. You know, we all get color razor blades anyway. Hell, it ain't gonna hurt. You know, although I guess they weren't planning on, you know, a gallon and a half of blood pouring out of his arm as soon as they pulled the blade out. But
I don't know why you wouldn't.
Exactly. You know, but who, you know, it's good for the business, but who is it good for?
No, like you said, it's you know,
it's simply good for DVD sales because there's people who are going to watch it just for the awe factor of, I got it. It's like, I got stabbed. I got to see that. But then again, the joke's on them because in this day and age, 2 days later, it was on YouTube, you know, from five different angles from cell phones.
Yeah.
And more people have watched it on YouTube than have purchased a DVD anyway. But in their eyes, it's back to, well, they're talking about us. We're getting you know, publicity because people are talking about the two guys that did the stabbing in Alabama.
But how are the two guys that actually did it? How are they going to get anything out of it? Are they going to book those two guys and say, "Hey, you come in, we'll pay you both $150, $200 piece, but you got to do the stabbing thing again"? You know, how are the two guys in the match get anything out of it? The guy, you know, sure, the guy that, you know, that put on the show, he's getting. You know, he's getting DVD sales out of it. Guy's still making money off of it. But, you know, even though, you know, and I understand the advent of YouTube and everything, and God knows I watch tons of stuff on YouTube, more than I even watch, you know, WWE now. But, you know, he's still actually selling DVDs of this. He's the only one that's getting anything out of it, you know, because, you know, like I said, the other two guys, you know, were they going to get some more bookings off that publicity? You know, oh yeah, we're gonna book you guys, but you know we want the stabbing spot. You know, we definitely want the stabbing spot because that's what y'all are known for now. So I mean, okay, and then you go from that on. How do you top it the next time? You know, what are they possibly going to do? I mean, they've stabbed the guy. Michael Myers stabbed the guy. You know, that was more gruesome than anything I've seen in a horror movie. You know, as a matter of fact, I screamed away from even watching that. But you know what did they do the next time? That's my overlying thought of this whole thing. What do you do to top this?
Oh, I mean, I don't know. Like, you know, Insane Lane said on the show we did about it, you know, basically the only thing you can follow a stabbing would have to be a shooting would be the obviously the next choice. You're going to have to shoot somebody next year in a quote unquote safe place, you know, that ain't going to kill them. It's just going to you know, graze them a bit, you know.
Well, I mean, that just opens a whole new can of worms. You know, number one, who is going to be ignorant enough to take it? Like, hey, why don't we shoot you in the side, and we'll make sure and miss all the vital organs, and we're going to shoot you in the side. Okay, number one, who's going to be that guy? Number two, who is going to be the guy that pulls the trigger? Number one, I'm not shooting anybody, okay, because there's a whole different thing if... It's one thing to have somebody retarded enough to want to take something like that. It's a whole different thing when you're the guy pulling the trigger. Okay, you can be brought up on criminal charges because of it. Because, well, that's assault with a deadly weapon.
Yeah.
Well, I guess technically a box cutter could be too. But, you know, and how do you even pull that off in a building like a National Guard armory? Because, number one, you start shooting in a National Guard armory, you know, Gomer Pyle's going to come out and throw you to the ground and beat you to death or something.
All right, I'm going to get two guys some extra bookings right here because I think I got the answer to your question. I think the guy who would take the bullet, I think Danny Morris would take the bullet.
And it wouldn't hurt him.
Yeah, it would definitely tear up the bullet. Never even break the skin, Danny Morris.
And I think David Cox would probably be willing to be the trigger man on that deal.
I think David would probably shoot himself before he would probably shoot Danny. Could you just imagine that conversation? All right, Danny, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to shoot you with this .38. Now, you lay down and sail. That'll be the finish.
We're going to put one of them vests under
you. We'll put one of them vests under you. Under your Doug Gilbert. Under your Doug Gilbert singlet. We're going to put one of them vests on. And
we're going to give you the D-Lo chest protector under your Doug Gilbert singlet.
Yeah,
and I'm not going to aim for the head.
Yeah. We're not going to shoot you in the face, although that would probably be the safest place to do it. But. And then in turn, Danny Morris comes back and say, "Well, can I run your head in the mat before that?" maybe those two guys wouldn't be the ones to do it, but I don't know. But getting back, you know, I guess real talk here. You know, how would you even want? I mean, because it's coming. There's no doubt that has to be coming. Somebody is sitting in a basement somewhere thinking, how can we pull off shooting somebody?
It's, yeah, I mean, it's the natural progression. Once you want, if you made it all the way to stabbing, and some of the other crazy stuff that I've heard about overseas that I haven't actually seen, I've just heard tell of, it's coming. It's going there. As for their desired effect, because I know what some of their logic is on this. Now, you having seen it for the first time, either as a wrestler or just as a fan, having seen that, does that give you the desire, like when you go to Amory tonight, are you going to be like, oh my God, you've got to see this thing I saw today. A guy got stabbed with a box cutter in a wrestling match. It was crazy. A guy got suplexed on a shopping cart. It's crazy. Are you motivated to go try to get other people to see this, or as a wrestler, is that embarrassing to you that a business you're a part of has come to that, and would you rather people not know about it?
Well, I don't know. That's a difficult question because, of course, you want to be like, you know, there's two guys dumb enough in this world, one of them to stab the other guy, and the other guy let him, you know. What I saw, and this is my absolute opinion on death matches and hardcore and all that stuff. You know, even when ECW was at its height and they were doing, you know, huge money, you know, doing all that crazy stuff, I've never thought of that as wrestling because it's not. That's not wrestling. That's a bunch of guys that's going to Lowe's and bringing a bunch of stuff and hitting each other with it because there's no psychology to it. There's no build up to it. There's no logic for it. They just jump in the ring and start hitting each other with stuff. You know, there's no logic behind it. You know, even with a wrestling match, you can look at two guys in a building fighting each other, okay? If you look at a legitimate fight, okay, it would be two guys somewhere fighting each other,
right?
Okay? They come together for this. They bring, they've got 300 light bulbs. They've got a garbage can, a shopping cart, of artificial Santa Claus, a damn, you know, all this stuff, a board when they, I mean, there's no logic to it whatsoever. So I don't even call it wrestling, you know. So I don't even put that in the same ballpark as a wrestling show, you know, because I don't think that you can call that crap wrestling because it's not. I never, you know, even like I said a while ago when ECW was doing huge numbers, I never thought of that as wrestling because it's not wrestling. It's not, there's no story behind it. There's no, you know, maybe there's some storyline to it because, you know, ECW was real big on doing storylines. But, you know, as far as wrestling goes, there wasn't just really a whole lot of wrestling going on. And, you know, and ECW looks like a, you know, a playground kids compared to this deathmatch thing you just showed me. You know, that's not wrestling. Those guys cannot walk out of that building. I have no idea how they walk out of that building if that's all they do and call themselves wrestlers, because that's not wrestling. That is not wrestling.
Well, to me, the art of wrestling is being able to go in the ring and convince somebody that you're either competing or you're fighting, whichever term you want to take. But anyway, to convince somebody that you're inflicting bodily harm and you're not. And that takes some talent. That takes some training. That takes some skill to do that. You can go in any bar or, you know, anywhere, just wherever rednecks may gather, and find some idiot who's either tough enough or stupid enough by whatever logic of, you know, school of thought you want to take, that can take getting hit in the face with a barbed wire bat, that can take getting thrown through plate glass, that can take getting stabbed, and that's not talent. That's just either they have a strong head.
Anybody can do that. I mean, you know, it doesn't take, you know, any amount of talent whatsoever to hit somebody over the head with something. You know, I could go, my grandmother can hit me over the head with something. You know, that doesn't take any talent. Going in the ring and taking two guys and a referee and telling a story with them, you know, with moves, with body language, with, you know, selling and all those things, you know, that takes talent. That crap that's on that DVD, that doesn't take talent whatsoever. All that takes is a pulse. You know, that doesn't, it, there's no, you know, it doesn't, you know, they don't require any thought. Because you just go in the ring and you do it, and, okay, this is a spot where I'm going to pin you, and that's it. I mean, there's no storytelling to it. There's no, you know, I don't understand the whole logic behind it. I don't. You know, especially for the guys involved. the promoter, I can completely understand his thought because he's the one making money off of it. You know, the two guys in the ring, they're the ones leaving, got this sewn up with $50 in their pocket. You know, I don't understand their end of it, but you know, I don't know.
As I've said, the only relation it has to wrestling is the fact it takes place in a ring.
Yeah, and some of these things are, you know, are, I don't even know if you call some of them a ring. You know, I saw a clip somewhere, I think it was in Memphis or something, and these guys were wrestling in what was supposed to have looked like a ring. It looked like a blue tarpaulin from Walmart spread out on the ground with some tomato steaks and some water hose wrapped around it. I mean, that's not a ring. That's an eyesore, I guess. But, you know, I guess that's the only symbolic thing is actually thing that it actually happens in a ring. But here's my question. Why have the ring?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it serves no purpose.
You know, it serves no purpose other than to say, I guess that's the only way you call it a wrestling show because that's the only resemblance to a wrestling show it has. You know, it takes place in a ring.
All right, so we've established that Neil Real Ill Taylor is not a fan of deathmatch wrestling, and you probably will not see Neil Taylor on the lineup for any upcoming Carnage Cups, King of the Deathmatch tournaments over in Kentucky, any of that kind of thing.
No,
so
I'm pretty certain of that. I don't think I'll ever be that hungry. I don't think it's possible.
Well, that's good. So while we got you here, we're running a little longer than we normally do, but that's what me and you tend to do. So, you know, what? Anything else on your mind? Any other topics of interest or any shows you want to plug or just anything out there that you want to?
Not necessarily. Kind of getting, I've been laying low for about the last, you know, few months, maybe about probably about the last 6 months, actually. I'm starting to get back in the mix a little bit. Got some, you know, big stuff coming up. Some more trips to the coast. Possibly going to show back up on the Memphis scene here pretty soon. IPW wrestling, which is something I've been a big part of here in the last couple of weeks. They do shows in the Tupelo area. Of course, if you're in the Tupelo area, come see IPW. Even EPW, the show in Boonville, I work at some, you know, check it out, you know, NeilRealDealTaylor.com. Make sure and keep a check on it because I usually post where I'm going to be on there. Facebook, search Neil Taylor on Facebook. Make sure to add me on there because I add everybody. So send me an ad on there. Follow me on Twitter, NeilTaylor1999 is my screen name or handle or whatever you call it. So make sure and follow me on Twitter. So, but just you know, keep a check, and you know, if you see me advertised on the card, hey, come out and say hello, and you know, we'll try to entertain you for a little while anyway.
Well, all right, well, it was a pleasure talking to you on the show once again, and of course it was a great having you as a guest here at Casa de Shaolin, and glad you got to go with me to Pro South last night, and hopefully it's become a little more regular thing. Come over here, we'll go hit Pro South, or we'll go to get on a show in Georgia, or go hang out in Atlanta, or do something. But
it was definitely interesting coming back to Pro South, and you know, anywhere that, you know, I haven't ever been before, and guys I ain't never met. You know, I get a big kick out of just meeting people. You know, and it's different styles and different ways people work, and you know, and just different shows, different areas. I'm a big fan of that. Another thing, if you're interested in booking Neil Taylor, if you want a sure enough old school Memphis guy on your show, make sure and hit me up on NeilRealDealTaylor.com. I do all my booking stuff through it. So hit me up on there if you're interested in having Neil Taylor on your show.
Okay, so there it was, my conversation with my friend Neil Taylor. I'm sure it may have ruffled a few feathers with, you know, some of the deathmatch wrestlers and maybe a certain promotion here in Alabama. But what can I say? Everybody's entitled to their opinion, and that's Neil's opinion on deathmatch wrestling, and I tend to agree with his assessment of it. So, you know, like I said, if you have an issue with it and you feel you have a valid point to make, contact me at genejackson95@gmail.com, and we'll discuss it.
You know, we don't all have to agree on each other's opinions. I don't agree with Neil's opinions on ECW. I don't feel that Neil really watched a lot of ECW in its prime. And I think maybe he's just going off of things he's read and maybe highlight videos he's seen. But ECW was a lot more layered than just hardcore wrestling. For every match involving a broken table or barbed wire or a baseball bat or whatever, you had matches out there featuring guys like Too Cold Scorpio, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, Rey Mysterio, Psychosis, Chris Jericho, guys out there who were having just off the charts wrestling matches as well. You know, Shane Douglas, guys who could work and who were you know, putting on wrestling matches to balance out the hardcore aspect of it. So, you know, I don't agree with everything he says. He don't agree with everything I say, and we're not all going to agree with each other. But everybody's got the right to their opinion. And you know, and if you have a different opinion, then maybe we can arrange for you to come on here and tell yours. But you know, like I say, I think he made some pretty valid points there, and some that I really don't see how you could dispute. You know, I mean, it is what it is. So anyway, I want to thank Neil for being on the show. Hope to have him on again one of these days. Hope to have him back over here in Gadsden to hang out, because I always have a good time hanging out with Neil. We've traveled a lot of miles together and done a lot of things in wrestling, and he's a great guy and a great friend. And hope he can maybe make it back over to Pro South again. And speaking of Pro South, they're one of our sponsors here at Wrestling News Center Podcast. So we'd like to mention that, you know, every Friday night in Piedmont, Alabama, at the Pro South Arena at 627 Southern Avenue, NWA Pro South Wrestling can be seen. The doors open at 6 p.m. Bell time is 7 o'clock. It's a great family show. You know, the show itself is not, you know, over the top violent or you know, no harsh language or anything. It's a good family show. Now the people in the crowd, maybe another story. They tend to get into it, and they really hate the bad guys, especially one's named Gene Jackson. But make the trip to Piedmont and check it out. You get to see, you know, Pro South stars like the Future Classic, Tyler Gage, Epic Grant Mitchell, Big Tomb, Daniel Alexander, The Prodigy, The Last Hero, Ace Haven, Kyle Matthews, Brian Alexander, Mike Posey, The Dakota Outlaw, many more. But we also, you know, you see different guys coming in, you know, just like this past week, Neil Taylor was there. This coming Friday night, Jeremy Flint, a friend of mine, will be returning to Pro South. I'm looking forward to working with him again, and I'm hoping we'll be able to sit Jeremy down and have him as a guest for next week's podcast that you'll be able to listen to, because Jeremy's a funny guy. He's always entertaining to listen to, and I think he would make for a great guest here for the podcast. So we're going to try to make that happen for you for next week. But for more info on Pro South Wrestling, go to facebook.com/ProSouthWrestling. If you want to keep up with all the action here in Alabama on the wrestling scene of Alabama, you can check out a brand new Alabama Wrestling News Board at alabamaprowrestling.net. It's updated daily with news, upcoming events, results, videos, all that kind of stuff. So go there and bookmark it and tell a friend to check out alabamaprowrestling.net. I mentioned it last week. I want to mention it again. You know, bevnerd.com. It's a website and video podcast dedicated to reviewing various snacks and unique, you know, beverages. It's hosted by our friend Jason Coleman, who you might know better as a professional wrestler Cabana Man Dan. Jason tries out all the latest snacks and beverages and gives you his honest take on them. It's a fun show, and I highly recommend checking it out. The show's really catching on, and more companies are sending Jason their products to review. So, you know, don't go out spending a bunch of money on snacks you might not like. Check out bevnerd.com and see what Jason's take on them is before you go and try it. And you can also find him on Facebook at facebook.com/bevnerd. That's BEVNERD. And for more wrestling and reviews, go to wrestlingnewscenter.com. Updates throughout the day, every day, with columns from your favorite news center columnists like Axeman, Loose Cannon, D-Rock, Terrence Ward, and, of course, my Vince Hates Us All column that's been getting updated more frequently than ever here lately. If you have something wrestling-related you would like promoted here on the show, you know, an upcoming show, a DVD, a website, your own podcast, whatever. If it's got something to do with wrestling, or, you know, if you're a friend of mine like Jason, even if it doesn't have something to do with wrestling, more than likely we can work out a trade-off to mention it here on the show to our listeners who the listeners are growing each and every week. We're getting more and more downloads. The old shows are now, the first couple of episodes are getting downloaded even more. So I want to thank everybody that's listening and telling folks and spreading the word out there about Wrestling News Center Podcast. We hope it just manages to get bigger and better as we move forward. And I do want to thank everybody for being a part of that. And, you know, until next time, make sure you get out there and support indie wrestling in your area. And, you know, thanks for listening.
So say goodnight to the bad guy.
Our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hey, Farva. What's the name of that restaurant you like with all the goofy shit on the walls and the mozzarella sticks?
You mean shenanigans?
No! Oh.
You're talking about shenanigans, right?
Put those away!